Accession number 10165, reel number 32.
Martin McLean, reel 32. You were telling me about this parade where the officers suddenly arrive when they shouldn't. Yes.
I saw the looks of frustration and annoyance in the face of the men. Well, I've always been a champion of the soldier. Although I keep them in line with discipline, I think you can only chivvy a man up so far and no further. The man's only human being after all. And so I halted the company, fronted them up, and went up and saluted my company commander. I said, "Sir, if you don't mind, would you take your officers off parade?" "Why?" I said, "Well, you detail the company sergeant's drill parade, sir. And in a regular army training book, of unwritten law, is that if it's a company sergeant's drill parade, the company sergeant major only drills their men, and officers will not show up until it's a company commander's drill parade, and then they take over the parade and run as they want." I said, "These men don't know whether they're on the head or the heels. Everybody's shouting at them, and they're going berserk." So the company commander lost his blob at this, obviously. True enough, but he should know better, being the next guards NCO from the horse guards. Whether they did drill or not, I don't know. I should imagine they did. And I was whittled up before the commanding officer, once again, Charlie VA, Colonel VA. And I was marched in on this before the commanding officer. And he asked me what it was all about, and I told him. He says, "Right off, Sergeant Major. Right off, Major. Captain Hungett." He says, "Sergeant Major McLean's no longer in your company. I'll find a replacement for him." So I lost my job as a company Sergeant Major. So I went back to my tent and cleared the tent out and went back to battalion headquarters. And I was very crestfallen, you know. To lose your job as a company sergeant major is a blow. It's not only a blow to your own pride, it's a blow everybody in the battalion is talking about you. I wonder if anybody really thought of the reason why I'd lost my job and championed me in the cause, because somebody's got to champion men. I was sent back to company HQ, to battalion HQ, and I was then still not a year as company sergeant major. Well, that maybe seems strange to people who are not versed with this subject. To be an RSM, you must hold the job a year before you become established on the war establishment. In other words, if you fall short of being RSM for a week before the year's up, then you come back to sergeant major. And the same thing applies to sergeant major. You had to hold the rank for a year because it was an appointment to a company.
So and you were back to PSM.
And I was back to PSM again. I was very crestfallen at this. I'd apparently done well on the aptitude tests, but that made no difference. I was a driver, could drive any. I'd driven everything that the army had prior to this new driving scheme. And I didn't know what was going to happen to us, and I was just given little odds and ends of escort duties, jobs while I'd battalion HQ, which only lasted a very short while, maybe a week. And I was sent for by the adjutant one day. He says, "Right, Sergeant Major," he says, "there's a job for you. I want you to go pack your kit and go off and join brigade headquarters of 127 Infant Brigade." He says, "They want a Sergeant Major there," and he says, "I think it would do you good to be out the battalion for a while." He says, "So off you go." And they put transport on, and off I went to this new brigade headquarters, and they had no tanks, they had no equipment, but they're a brigade foreman to become a tank unit.
Where were they?
And they were at Bury St Edmunds. They were near Thetford, if anything. They were on the road from where we were towards Thetford. There was no particular place, just was stuck in the fields by a farmhouse. Well, them days, having been through Dunkirk, I'd always made my pledge to be fit, to be perfectly physically fit, so that in the event of a war, I'd be able to do my job without any falling out, without any slackness in marching, to complete any task I was given as with a fit body. So whilst I was there, I got started looking around the place. It was a squalid camp. I looked in the men's billets. They had tents. Tented accommodation. The walls of the billets were never rolled up. The beds were never made up. The whole place was a cesspit of what a regular soldier would call of badly disciplined troops. There was a Sergeant Major of the Highland Light Infantry in charge of them, and he was posted because we had relieved the Highland Light Infantry from this brigade, and they went back up to, I think it was them that went off the 2nd Division to take, I don't know, anyway, it was, I relieved a Sergeant Major of the Highland Light Infantry. And one day I was out for a walk and a run, not knowing my future. I was PSM badges up, and I used to take off me jacket and me dress up in khaki slacks and cardigan and go for a long walk or a run, mainly run across the moors. And it was whilst on the moors I met a tall man in civilians, and he started talking to me and questioning me and asking me who I was and what I was doing. Well, them days were all on guard for the 5th Column, you know. You wouldn't talk too much. So I was just telling him I was out keeping fit, because I contend that a regular Sergeant Major should keep fit. And maybe I found some and yet to talk to. I was telling him about the coming down from Sergeant Major to PSM. And, you know, it just, maybe, I can't get my tongue around, and yet to listen to. And he seemed that sort of type of person who would listen. He had long top coat on. He'd been out for a walk as well. And he's walked along the road together, and I told him the story about losing my job. And I was out training. But I wouldn't tell him who I was with, nothing of that nature, because I knew so little of them myself. Well, 2 days later on, I'm sent for by the brigade major. And he said, normally it's my job to take you for an interview with the brigade commander. He says, there's no need to. You've already met the brigade commander, and he's very impressed with you. Now, he's told me about you losing your rank as Sergeant Major, and that you're now PSM. He says, well, on this new establishment, we have a rank of Sergeant Major, so you are now WO2. You put your crowns up again, and you're a WO2 Sergeant Major. So I said, I had a chat with the brigade major, and I said, well, sir, I'm not very happy about brigade headquarters discipline. I said, I know they're all working men. I know they're all drivers or clerks or involved batmen and things like that. I said, but I think they're living like a lot of pigs. And I said, this will lead to lice and lots of trouble as far as hygiene is concerned. He says, look, you do what you want with the men. If we think that you're overstepping the mark, we'll let you know. But you get them men in line as it should be, infantry men, and make them do as the things are worse. So I went to war on the men. I got the men together, asked for permission to have a scale-A parade. That means everybody on parade for a short while to explain who I was, what I intend doing, and what I wanted of them. So from then on, all the beds were made up. All tent walls were rolled up until the afternoon. You see, where the tent walls are rolled down and beds are left lying on the ground, a man can be lying sleeping in bed all day after being out all night. Well, the army had its systems. When the tent walls were rolled up and the beds made up, fresh air was blown through the ground where the men were lying, which made it more hygienic and better conditions. So I went to work on Brigade HQ, and I started taking some of them on weapon training and a little bit of drill in little batches. I couldn't get them all together. And then one day I'm sent for again. Brigade Major. Sergeant Major, I'm very sorry you've lost your job. I said, oh, hell, what have I done this time? I was really upset because I thought I was on a nice new job as a Sergeant Major with a mobile brigade. They were going to get tanks, they were going to get this, that and the other. He says, the trouble is, the 2nd Division which you have left has been ordered to go back to the 2nd Division because the 2nd Division has received embarkation orders and the divisional commander refuses to move without these Durham Light Infantry.
So the battalion, you mean?
The whole battalion. Well, I didn't know this till I was being told this. And so the whole battalion, he says, has got to go back as quickly as possible, back to the 2nd Division for embarkation leave and get away off to Destination X. So I went back to my battalion.
Can I just ask a couple more questions about the 127 Infantry Brigade headquarters? What had they originally sent you to do before you got this promotion from the brigade?
Well, mainly in the same role as any company sergeant major with a company, drill, discipline, nominal rules, keeping a hold of the men, looking after the sergeant's mess, seeing that things from the other rank said, without bothering the officers, was run right as it should do. Discipline was being maintained, hygiene was being maintained, sergeant's mess was being run properly, and the accounts was being run properly. All these sort of things fit into a sandwich's
rule of life. When you arrived, you're doing that as PSM, but they gave you the rank increase to do the same job.
Yes.
Right. So how long were you with them?
I was with them about 3 weeks.
So not long?
Not long, no. I was just getting to know them, and the men were getting to know me, and I accept the training, because I did explain to them. I'd seen so many people in Dunkirk who couldn't march, who were useless and couldn't do their jobs properly, or taken prisoner of war. They fell in the hands of the Germans, or were killed, shot and killed. Well, it made them have an interest in getting themselves fit. I give them pep talk. Went back to the battalion. No, I was back to PSM again. Down from my sandwiches to PSM again. The crowns were on off my arm like a yo-yo.
Was it a year's total or a year's continuous?
A year's total. You had to do 1 year.
So every bit helped?
So every bit... Yeah. Well, no. Every bit didn't help. I was back to PSM again, and if I got sandwich, I'd have to do another year.
So it wasn't a year's total, it was a year continuously.
That's right. So I got back to the battalion, and we land. I'm sent on the advance party up to the same billets again, Rillington. I'm walking around Rillington one day, and I met the colonel, Colonel Villiers, and he's given me his normal salute, sir. And he says, come here. He says, you run foul of your company commander, didn't you? I says, yes, sir. He says, well, he says, you have my sympathy, because these young officers don't know military procedure. He says, you have my sympathy, but I had to move you from the company. Now, you don't be a silly bugger. You go and put your sergeant major's crowns back up again. He says, you've never been struck off the strength of this battalion. We have a reinforcement sergeant major, and you're the reinforcement sergeant major. He says, so off you go home now. Doesn't matter what you're doing. Get your crowns up. He says, I don't want to see you walking around as a PSM. He says, I know your history of France. He says, you've done a good job. And he says, I'm not going to have you belittled. So the same man, when he was talking to me, he was a sick man, and I didn't know this. And he had to leave the battalion because he was unfit for overseas. And he died within a month of cancer. Anyway, things were moving. Everybody was getting kitted out for overseas, getting KD, KD's khaki drill, topies, and all the sort of stuff. All our kit bags were being marked for Destination X, because they never told you where you went to.
Were you no longer a mobile unit then? What was
no.
So that
no.
had all gone again?
We were all going out. The whole division was stood down. Somebody else had taken over the sea defences. Every unit had stood down and are now kitting out for to go overseas.
Did you regret losing that mobile status?
No, not really. It was much the same. It meant he didn't do as much marching, which was a bugbear of an infantryman. It was march, till I used to be 6'4", and I marched so much I'm now 5'4½". We marched so much that it was nice to have transport taking your own. Everybody went on embarkation leave. I think it was 10 days, and back we came, and off we went on the trains. And you know, my wife had just had our second child, Martin, who was born in February, Valentine's Day. And the train stopped on its way, taking the whole battalion, great long train, with 1,000 troops on it, more or less. And they all stand there. The train passed through Central Station, Newcastle, where we all live, you know. And the people are looking at, oh, when will I see that again? And the train wandered away around, passed through Heaton Junction, and I could see the house where the wife was living with the baby. And I wasn't heartbroken, but you know how you get a yearning to see them again. But we couldn't, the train was on movement.
So what month was this? What year?
This was April. And we landed up on the Clyde. And we, I'd never been aboard a trooper before, because I explained in my early stages, I was always taken off drafts because I was a rugby player. And for one thing or another, I never got on a trooper. Troopers was the common means of transporting troops around them days. And by Jove, some of them had a horrible name. The Devonshire was one of them. It was a ship that used to roll around a lot, apparently, and they make everybody seasick and throw a kit around. And anyway, we didn't know what to expect, and we landed up at on the Clyde, and we were quickly put aboard the most beautiful thing ship that one could ever wish to be on, Empress of Canada. And it was a Cunard liner changed into a trooper, and all round us was great big liners of the Cunard class, all in their field or Royal Navy grey camouflage for sea vessels, you know. They're all painted in grey and stripes and what have you for camouflage, naval colours. We went aboard the Empress of Canada.
Did you know where you were going?
No, they wouldn't tell you. When you get aboard a boat, they never tell you where you're going. You're still in Destination X, near the place. So we're on Destination X. As I told you before, I was always the one for looking after the men. So we were allocated a troop deck D in this place and found the way down, got the men in, and then all of a sudden I saw it wasn't a very small place. It was a place where wooden tables, wooden forms, and hooks all over the place for the men to hang hammocks. And in one corner is a big pile of hammocks for the men to be each given a hammock. And I could see that it would just hold the number of men that it was entitled to hold. And then a short while after I'd been down there, another crowd of people of the Royal Artillery of equal strength came down this hold. Dear me, you couldn't sit anyway. Everybody's crushed in. And their officers were arguing with me. And I said, no, sir, there's a mistake here somewhere. Somebody's on the wrong mess deck. I said, surely the men can't sleep like this. And of course, I got told that this is where they had to come and this is where they were going to stay. So we're still haggling about when the brigadier start doing his round of the ships and the commanding officer. And I came down to this hole and I went straight to the brigadier. I said, sir, surely the men aren't going to sleep like this, live like this. I said, surely there's more space for them. And the brigadier looked at me in you know, not disgust, but he looked at us in surprise. I said, there's no room for the men to hang the hammocks. I said, I've issued the hammocks that's there, and there's certainly no hammocks for these other crowds, so that we must be double bunked somehow. And so he carried out, he sent for the ship's officer, who was a Canadian, actually. He was a Canadian naval officer. Now, the ship's officer is a naval man responsible for the military side of the ship. Just not discipline, but where the troops are billeted, what they have to do, their meals and all this sort of thing. And he came and he says, my God, he says there's something wrong here. And they found that the artillery were in the wrong A deck. And so they all moved out and we could breathe and the lads could get the hammocks up again. But my CO, again, a new CO, didn't like me approaching the brigadier, but I couldn't see the CO. I told the brigadier, I thought this was ridiculous. So the men got sorted out, and we got into better billets, and then I went to find my billets. And believe it or not, I'd never been on a troop. I don't think I'd been on a ship before. I was amazed at the quality, the billet that I got with other sergeants. You have the first and second class corridors on the ship, and first and second class accommodation. There we were, right up on the first class accommodation, next to the purser's office. And there were six warrant officers of us in a bunk that would normally hold two. The two beds were still there, but they'd made bunks up and above them, and on the other two more on the other side, six warrant officers. And beautiful accommodation, with their own toilets, their own bathrooms, and complete, lovely. Couldn't have been better. I thought we were in the wrong place, actually. I says, we'll be shifted from here. Well, the sergeant majors with were nearly all people had been to India. They'd been on troopers before. And they were telling us all the stories about troop ships, but not that it mattered. And then when we went for a meal, where you had to sit, you had to be there to see the amazement and the looks on our faces. All through the war, from the start of France, we'd been short of food. We'd been on rationed food. And we're told that our accommodation for feeding was down and down this way. Somebody took us down there. And there we were in a great big massive ballroom, dining room effect, with chandeliers and things hanging up, beautiful lighting, all the tables with all the silver on, cut glass decanters and everything on the table with water in, not beer. And it was, the ship was in a beautiful state. On the tables, some red hot bread buns, butter, not margarine, not axle grease, we used to call it in the army. And then when they brought the meal on, dear me, turkey and all sorts, we lived like bantam cocks in that.
Did the men get that?
The men, no. The men got the same sort of food, but they had it in the mess decks. You see, I mentioned when on the mess deck, they have the tables and they have the forms, and then they have the hooks for hanging up the hammocks. Well, the men used to go and get a mess, as they called it, a food. There'd be so many men detailed that'd go and get two or three dixies, a bucket with tea in, or a container with tea in, and come and issue it to each table on the mess deck. So they supplied themselves. They've got plenty of food, but they lived in a ship's hull, you could say, steel walls, with the sweat constantly running off them with the number of people that was in them. And it was crowded, but nevertheless, that's where they ate.
Now, you mentioned your new CO. What was his name? Do you remember?
Let me think. The colonel's name was Brown. He had come from someplace, from a staff job somewhere, and given this appointment of his commanding officer. He didn't know any of us, so he was a bit of a stranger, and we were strange to him. We did eventually get to know him. He was a very much Sandhurst officer. He hadn't been in action before, and he's still that stereotype Sandhurst type of officer, which to an old soldier, they know what they mean. They go by the book, they go by the rules, whereas an officer who's been in action seems to throw the rule book away and goes by the training he's been taught plus the his knowledge of how men should be handled, having been in action with them.
And that's why he'd objected to you speaking to the brigadier?
Yes, because it was a matter of protocol.
And you were still with the
reinforcement company?
Reinforcement?
Yes.
That was with the headquarters, was
it? No, we had formed a company of our own. When we formed up for mobilisation for to go overseas, the companies had their strength, and all people over that strength were sent to reinforcement company. Sergeants and corporals were a bit old for what the company commanders had thought were old or a bit not good enough for their companies. They turfed out and sent to me. I got all the awkward buggers. And then we got a draft in, which helped to make up the reinforcement company. So we had 144 men, much the same as a company.
And these were the men you were looking after on
these were the men I was looking after. Now, how do we keep the men fit on this boat? It was well settled for us. Every day we got a period of time when we could walk around in slippers, by the way, in PT shoes, not in ammunition boots, around the decks to keep fit. And full pack on, rifle, and the men used to march, keep them fit. And then there'd be plenty of PT, plenty of basketball stuff, not medicine ball stuff. The number of medicine balls that went over the side of the ship was fantastic. We're in a big, huge convoy of liners and cargo ships and warships taking us off from this destination X. And we were always interested in watching. That's all you could do, lean over the side of the rail watching, apart from your training. But you used to take the men on weapon training, stripping brains, stripping them blindfold so they knew how to work gun, how to change barrels in the dark, how to do the drill, i.e., which is immediate action if the gun stops. A gun doesn't fire always, has some little fault in it, like a crossfeed or a damage around, make the gun stop. The men could do it all blindfold, and we used to do all this. As a matter of fact, we were all bored with it to finish, and of course, at the same time, they decided to hold lectures to fill the time in for the men. And there were some very interesting lectures. We had in our classroom, in my company, a school teacher. And mind, he looked a school teacher. He didn't look like an infant man. He had that frailness about him. And he was a very interesting man to listen to when he got on talking. And then they start trying to teach the men mathematics and things like that. Well, that didn't go down very well because the men couldn't see the point in mathematics when they were going to fight. Anyway, different officers gave different little stories of their own life or their own experiences. I was called upon to tell my little stories now and again of the army at the depot days and all that sort of thing, to try to instill some the background of military knowledge into them. And we used to have some happy little hours down this place. And then that ran out, so they started a system of kins games. Now, kins games seems a silly thing, but by the lad, it was a great little thing. What it was is they put 20 objects on a table, on a floor. You would stand for 2 minutes looking at them. And then they'd take all them, you'd turn around, they'd take them all away. And then you had to write on a piece of paper all the objects that was on that piece of thing. And it increased the observation of people tremendously, you know, seeing things and making note of them, which came in, I'd say, was very handy for a man in the front. He'd take note of what was in front of him and could see it. Well, these kins games, we didn't like it at first, but I got my teeth in it and I thought, oh, great. And then to finish, so the men, it was a bit of a competition to see who could get the 20 things correct. And then they start increasing more objects. Maybe parts of a Bren gun, maybe something out of a bloke's pocket, buttons, anything, just to make them up.
That's kins, K-I-N-S.
Kins game, K-I-N, K-I-N. I don't know where the name came from, but that's what it was called. On this job, the warrant officers and officers were given a job, and that was to go on submarine watch. Submarine watch, everyone was on alert, we were on a big convoy looking for submarines and things like that. We were broken up into duties and sections. There'd be 6 men on a shift, either officers or men, could be from captain down over, sergeant majors. 2 would be up in the front of the boat, the pointy end of the boat, much to the ship's officer's disgust. We always used to get him on, he'd say, up in the bow, we'd say the pointy end of the ship or the blunt end. And he used to really get upset about this as Canadian officer. So there'd be 2 right up in the bow of the boat, watching out for submarines. And beside you had a disc with a pointer on, a large disc. And one side of the ship would be green, on the other side would be red, starboard and port, when according to the lights. I still don't know them. Starboard and port. And there was a pointer on, which in the event of you seeing a submarine, it put the point at the submarine and it would give off the degrees there. And it showed submarine, green, and you'd give off the direction. And then they'd sound the alarm and everybody take action stations and submarine, you know, life-saving stations. So there was 2 on the prow of the ship. There was 2 on the bridge beside the commander and the naval commander and the captain of the ship. 1 on each wing, and there was 2 on the end of the ship, and we used to rotate onto different things. Very interesting being on the bridge, seeing how they run the ship and the signals being sent from one ship to the other. And we had an officer with us, and we had a bloke who used to mess on the same table as us, yeoman of signals. Well, we soldiers didn't know what a yeoman of signals was, or commander. Well, the commander was the convoy commander, and he was on our ship. And he had with him a Royal Naval Yeoman of Signals. And he was the man that sent the signals up at the halyards, telling the ships to deploy, move off different angles and things like this. And they could hear them passing the orders over. We didn't see any submarines, but however, we were, night and day, we were on the submarine watch, taking our rotation, all the officers in the ship, because don't forget, there wasn't just the Durhams there, there was all brigade headquarters. There was some other attached troops like REMC or RESC.
There were no other battalions, though?
No, just our battalion, and made up with, the boat was filled up with the other parts of the division, parts of our brigade, I'd say.
How about seasickness? Was that a problem for any of you?
Seasickness, yes. The first 3 days out, it became not too bad. The sea wasn't rough, but there was quite a lot of seasickness, and when you're seasick, boy, you think your end was coming.
You got
it. I was seasick, yes. You don't want to talk about food. You think your whole world is coming to bits. You don't know your head or your heels. And after 2 or 3 days, you get over it. We had another incident of getting seasick, which I'll tell you in a short while about. We start, the ship's crew, or the RSM of the ship, they have on each ship, like they have a ship's officer. They have a ship's RSM, who's maybe a person who's been a too old to be in the infantry battalion or too old for active service. They put him on the ships as ships RSM. And he invariably arranges bingo, as it was called them days, housey. And the men used to sit on the decks and were getting into fine weather. And, it, well, April was nice weather in any case, but getting the warmer weather all the way down. We didn't know where we were going, we were just seabound. All we could see was sea. And they'd have this, these games of bingo or housey. I never used to play this because I thought it was a silly game for to get rid of your money.